business, and we'll continue with the discussion.
And so the pending question was just to describe, to translate into plain English, what we mean when we talk about disposal of contaminated media.
Yes, Commissioner.
Those of us with cable TV might define it differently than you do. So just what do you mean by contaminated media?
Definitely. So DEQ has certain thresholds for contaminants. Essentially, for this project, we're talking about the top layer of soil in the ditches that we'll be excavating. So over years of lead, perhaps, or other contaminants from automobiles, that's basically what we're talking about.
And so when the bids came back, we had originally estimated $30 a ton. The bids came back at $50 a ton. We don't actually control that part. That's a function of the market and available space to dump or wherever it's treated, right? So
that's correct.
Okay, so that's fine. Thank you.
Of course. Other questions or other points for us to consider?
Mayor, I move the report.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
I don't think we have a testimony, public testimony for this.
Oh, I'm sorry. We haven't taken testimony yet. Yeah. Anyone want to speak on this item? Okay. Roll call, please.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Thank you all very much. Before we move on to the next item, Mr. Johnson, you were shouting during a city council meeting. You've been warned. And if you do that again, you'll be excluded. Do you understand? Thank you. All right. 750.
Adopt the disposition of city real property policy.
Okay. Mr. Inge, welcome.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Brian Inge. Internal Business Services with me. I have Betsy Ames. Last week, we presented for council for your consideration the proposed disposition of city real property. There were some attached to that was an exhibit. Council asked us to make amendments to the exhibit, and so I'd like to have Betsy Ames to discuss with you the changes that we are proposing to the exhibit based on the instructions that we received from council last week.
Okay, Ms. Ames, good morning.
Hi, Betsy Ames with the Office of Management and Finance. Carla is passing out a packet that has three documents. The top document is a summary of the proposed amendments to be considered at this hearing, as well as on the third page, the amendments that were made at the July 1st hearing last week to both the resolution and the exhibit. And then attached to that is an amended resolution with the one change that you made last week showing in bold. And then on the exhibit, there are changes that are shown both in bold for the amendments that you approved last week, as well as in italics for those that you asked that we bring back this week for consideration. At the council session, you requested that we send these out to the community, and ONI assisted us by providing these documents to their distribution list, so community members have seen these over the long holiday weekend and till today, and I know that they've been distributed further beyond that original distribution as well. The three proposed amendments that you asked to be considered at this session. One was not discussed last week. This was an amendment that Commissioner Fritz recommended, asking that we amend the section for the internal notification process to allow for bureaus to express an interest even if they don't have funding in hand right at that moment, so that the commissioners in charge can reasonably agree to extend the period of time so that a bureau could propose something in the next budget cycle for consideration so that bureaus can express interest even if they don't have the money right there available at the moment. The second amendment is one that Commissioner Fish raised last week, which was amended slightly after discussion amongst the council offices, and this is to the external notification process to recommend or to require that the city real property coordinator contact the neighborhood coalition office to let them know that their neighborhood association affiliated with a property that has been deemed excess has not responded to the initial inquiry to try to prompt that neighborhood association to provide an official response to the notice of the property being available. The third amendment, which is on the second page, is in response to Commissioner Saltzman's request to add language to say that whenever practicable, the Bureau and the Commissioner in charge shall consider proposing conditions for disposition of the real property for affordable housing, community, or open space use. We added that both in Section 3D and then also clarified that the ordinance, as described in Section 3D3, should include those proposed conditions as part of the ordinance so that when the council votes on it, they're including consideration of that. I understand that Commissioner Fritz may have another amendment as well.
Okay, yes, please.
I move that we change the Section 3C to amend the 45-day calendar day notification for the community to instead read 60 calendar days. The rationale for this is that we shouldn't be in any particular hurry to be selling off properties, and 60 days is more realistic, especially for neighborhood associations, some of which meet on an every other month basis.
Second.
Thank you.
Okay, further discussion on including that amendment among the amendments that we're considering today? Roll call.
Fish. Saltzman.
Aye.
Fritz.
Is this on all of the amendments?
It's just on that one, and okay, we'll come back to the rest of the package.
Fish.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. And then if there's no further discussion, want to make a motion on the package of amendments? Or
if I could, Mayor.
Sure.
Betsy, my amendment was predicated on ensuring within the 45-day period there was some actual feedback from the neighborhood, the coalition, or the neighborhood association. If we're extending the clock to 60 days, does that change either the timeline or the necessity for my amendment?
I think the 60 days provides additional opportunities for anyone who's received notice, either through the subscription or through the direct mailing that we'll be doing for the surrounding property owners and the signage on the property, as well as the subscription service. So any interested person can go on and sign up to receive notification. I think the 60 days gives them more opportunity to find out about it, as well as to contact their neighborhood association if they want their neighborhood association to also be actively involved. The neighborhood associations will have direct notice as well as the business associations and the coalition offices.
Of course, we're setting a floor, not a ceiling, so it could, at the city's discretion, be extended. I guess just my question is, does the Commissioner Fritz's amendment cause us to rethink either the need for or the timing of my amendment?
If I might answer that, I would say no. That it's still appropriate for the city to call after 30 days, which then gives the opportunity for the consideration at a subsequent neighborhood association meeting. So I think actually your amendment and mine
harmonize.
Yes,
that was the question. I wanted to hear from the team that's been drafting this, and that's what I would hope you say. And so thank you.
Yes, I think so too. And again, it's not like we do this every month. You know, this is a fairly rare occurrence. So taking 60 days instead of 45, fine with me. Belt and suspenders to call to make sure they got the notice makes sense to me.
It will, Mayor, just as a preview, it will become less rare.
Fair enough.
We are asking the utilities do a comprehensive look at properties that are no longer serving a ratepayer purpose. So there will be, I think, more than the council thinks down the road.
Fair enough, but this is still a reasonable timeline in my mind anyway. Okay, so further discussion about the amendments, and then a motion to accept the package of amendments that's before us in the document.
And to clarify, this is to put them on the table, and we'll then take testimony, right?
I would move the amendments. Yeah.
Okay. Roll call.
Saltzman.
So are we?
This is just accepting these amendments, and then we'll take testimony.
Aye.
Fritz.
Very much appreciate all the community input that's helped to shape these amendments. Aye.
Fish.
And I want to thank Betsy and her team, because this is a complex issue, and I think you've managed the public process very well. Aye.
Hales.
Thank you. Aye. Good work. Okay, now we'll take testimony, if any, on the amendments. So would anyone like to speak to the amendments?
We get a sign-up sheet for the amendments. Carol McCarthy, Lightning Watchdog X, and Michael Wade. believe it's
okay, come on up. Good morning.
Morning. Hello. Hello, everyone. Yes. My name is Carol McCarthy, and I live on Freeman Street in Portland, Oregon, 97219. I'm the chair of the Multnomah Neighborhood Association and as well the rep to the Parks, Sweeney Parks Committee, but I'm here today with my opinions informed by those roles, but speaking on my own behalf. Just to jump right in on Commissioner Fish's amendment to during the last hearing, I understood that your amendment required that the neighborhood associations actually reply in writing, not just that they be prompted to reply, but they actually be verifiable answering. I'm just throwing that out, and I want to get back onto my testimony because I'm afraid.
Won't be charged against your time, but okay. My amendment requires that we get confirmation that they have the notice, and then what they choose to do with it is at the discretion of the. But I wanted to make sure that we weren't assuming that they knew about it.
Oh.
So it would require affirmatively confirming that they have notice, and they would then have the right to either take action on it or to ask for additional time to take action on it, which is the problem we ran into with Freeman we're trying to cure.
And so is there a requirement that they give any kind of answer, that there be a verifiable answer back from the Neighborhood Association or the Coalition as to whether or not they're interested or not?
We can't require volunteers to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're just requiring that the city confirm that they have the actual notice and that they have an opportunity if they choose to weigh in.
Okay.
And that includes requesting an extension of time.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. So the issue of disposable municipal property, real property, became a primary concern of mine personally during the case of the Freeman water tank. Myself and my neighbors worked thousands of hours trying to protect that property, and we were unsuccessful, and we still feel it was unjustified what happened. The auditor's report, in fact, I think, did give us some solace that it emphasized that there had been no basis in law for the path that the city took, and also stated the importance of this policy that we're discussing today. So that was gratifying.
Carol, I just want to say on behalf of the Bureau, and I appreciate your advocacy, and I appreciate that the Neighborhood Association enthusiastically supported the new rules we crafted post-Freeman, but what you just said is factually incorrect. The auditor did not say there was no legal path forward, and I would just encourage you be an advocate as strongly as you want, and we're here to listen and make changes, and we've demonstrated that post-Freeman, mm-hmm. but to make claims like that undercuts your legitimacy.
Well, it's in my reading of it, the auditor said that they could find no basis in state law for the path that the city took. However, that the city's attorney stated things, but the auditor themselves could find no support for that position. So.
Okay, and you had a full chance to litigate that issue before a state court judge who did not agree with that view. I'm just saying we're here to fine-tune a proposal and hear you, not to relitigate Freeman. And if you make overgeneralizations about my bureau or what they did in Freeman, then I have to respectfully correct the record.
I appreciate that. So the Multnomah Neighborhood Association did submit comments on the Water Bureau's draft policy and also on the citywide draft. And most recently, last week, on Thursday, the Sweeney Parks Committee unanimously passed 3 motions on the current draft. Unfortunately, due to the limited time in the review period, the Sweeney Board will not be able to consider endorsing the motions from the Sweeney Parks Committee so that you might receive these before voting on the policy. And I think this goes to the point that the neighborhood associations need a lot of time. Even 60 days is inadequate because we have full agendas. We need to coordinate with the Sweeney Coalition and other coalitions, I'm sure, that also have full agendas. So I think throughout a theme of mine is that there's no hurry on disposing of these properties. Many of them have been held for decades, and that we need to make sure we give adequate time, or else we'll be losing valuable land. So I'm requesting that you include the items in my handout on the resolutions and exhibits. And they're consistent with those motions that were unanimously passed by the Sweeney Parks Committee. So the first item just expresses the concern, or it would be in the whereas, saying that there is a need, that neighborhood associations have requested adequate time to review. Secondly, that because the city has been given authorization to dispose of property by any method that the 4/5 of the council deem appropriate. We're offering, or I'm offering you, a method that would allow for property that's...
You're out of time, but let's spend a minute in dialogue on it. So you're suggesting, first of all, that we offer long-term leases to
yes.
the Parks Bureau, as opposed to making the property available to the Parks Bureau if they wish to purchase it, right?
Well, for properties that are that were purchased with ratepayer dollars that would have to be purchased at market value if it were to be transferred to the Parks Bureau, we're suggesting that a $1 100-year lease be offered instead until the council can deal with that issue, which is a stumbling block.
And then on the actual Exhibit A, you're suggesting 90 days instead of 45 or 60.
That's right. Initially, I actually thought 60 was enough, but the Sweeney Parks Committee convinced me that they really need 90 days.
Okay. All right. Have I captured the substance of we've got it, obviously, here in front of us, but...
Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning. You go next.
I think I'm in. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog X. Amendment 1, I do agree with. Amendment 3, I do agree with. Amendment 4, as stated, I'd like 90 days also. I'd like to refer back to Amendment 2 on the external notification. I would like to have 5 or 10 reputable commercial real estate brokerage companies also be notified. Now, we're having a problem on letters being sent out. I would recommend we maybe go certified mail on that. I know the cost is higher, but we might go in that direction also. That's just my opinion. But again, I want to make sure that the brokerage communities have ample time to review the properties. The brokerage communities are the professionals on marketing properties nationwide. They have the contact base. They have the understanding of values. I want to have them be involved on the process of any surplus property that may come about on the market. Now, just real fast, the term land banking is a concern that is concerning me at this time. I feel that we have land banked a tremendous amount of properties in the past, and we need to again focus on the infrastructure of transportation, parks, and housing. I feel if we look at the overall value of our capital assets, which in my understanding are 35 plus or minus billion dollars, if we begin to look at that number and determine that certain properties are not being utilized, they have not been utilized for many years, again, we're losing taxes that should be going back, and we're losing those taxes. If we take a percentage off the top of that valuation and we sell those properties that aren't being utilized, we can begin to make for the mistakes on the infrastructure for transportation, parks, and housing of the past with this money that we can generate. I'm not saying use properties that can be used for affordable housing, used for parks, uses that are very important to certain groups. I'm saying the infrastructure of this city has been neglected in the past. We have to make up that difference somehow, some way, and I think the possibility to look in this direction is there, and I hope the council will consider that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I just, because you're consistently thoughtful on this, so can I just ask you a couple questions?
Yes.
So between the time it's declared excess and prior to it being declared surplus by a 4/5 vote,
yeah,
you're not suggesting during that period that there be a mandatory appraisal, correct? You're talking about once it's been declared surplus and we're going out to the marketplace.
That is correct, sir. Once it's been declared surplus and...
So there are different kinds of properties that could be determined to be surplus.
Yes.
There could be something which is technically an easement or an odd-shaped piece of property that no longer has value to the city but helps complete someone's title, for example.
Yes.
There might be circumstances where it's just not cost-effective to get an appraisal of that because it has nominal value. Is your concern primarily with properties that have value where you want to make sure that we maximize our return?
Yes, sir. My concern is that when we begin to reach a level, let's just say a number of 500,000 and up, and when you get into that level of pricing on properties, the whole game really changes, because a lot of value in, as one of the speakers stated, is that we don't want to be in any hurry to sell a property. And I absolutely agree with that statement, because we've held these properties for many years. There's no reason to sell them fast, but reality is, when it becomes surplus and you put it on the open market, the most exposure and having a value set is very advantageous, especially by an appraisal, because the worst thing you ever want to do on a, say, a $5 million plus dollar property is state a value that's like $3.5 million, much lower than what it's really worth by an appraisal. And that investor comes in and comes in with a low offer, and you say, oh, by the way, we just did an appraisal. It's worth $5 million. Could you change your offer, sir? It doesn't happen.
So I'm going to make just a suggestion. You're raising a really important point. And the agency that has the most expertise in that is actually not here today. It's the Portland Development Commission, mm-hmm. because they are often charged by the council getting the best return. I'm going to urge my colleagues not to put into code now that issue. But since we're not going to have a surplus designation in the next couple of months, ask the PDC to give us some guidance. And one of the questions I think we should ask them is, if they agree with your assessment about the value that a broker brings. Remember, brokers charge a commission, so it does come off the top. What's the threshold that they would recommend we apply it to? What kinds of properties? And I'd like to hear from the PDC
that's a good
before.
Point.
But I agree with Lightning. I'm agreeing with the point you're making, and I think I'm going to ask that we defer resolving it until we've heard from our folks at PDC.
If I may make one point real fast. When I'm talking the appraisal value to determine the value of this property, that's by an appraiser that a reputable bank will look at and say, you know what, I would loan money based upon the expertise of this appraiser. Now, that's a very good value in the marketplace to an investor coming in and looking at that. Now, when we're talking real estate brokers, they are the experts in the business, and when they do their valuations based upon sales and current properties on the market and their professional experience in the marketplace itself, they'll set their value before they do their appraisal. But they're also licensed. They're also regulated by the state, and when they make a mistake, it will affect them tremendously on that value. Now, I'm not saying use a broker instead of an appraisal. I'm saying make sure you have that appraisal, but keep the brokers involved in the process to be there, because they can sell that property using a buyer brokerage agreement representing the developer investor on their side and dealing directly with the city.
Yeah,
the developer and investor will cover that commission.
And I'm gonna play devil's advocate on one point with you, which is,
yes, sir.
Some of the property we're gonna sell is actually comes subject to easements and other limitations. And I want to think through carefully whether it's in the public interest to use an appraisal and publicize a rate that then sets the market. Because, in fact, where we get the best return is often by letting the market determine price, not by having us set the expectation for the price. And we're going to get a huge premium on Terminal 1. We did not need an appraisal. It's very valuable property. And I want to make sure an appraisal doesn't, in essence, set market expectations, particularly where an appraiser takes a discount for things like there's a water main underneath the property or there's an easement. So, but you've raised an excellent point, and I think we're going to ask PDC to brief us on it.
Can I make one statement real fast?
Then we gotta
I'll be
move
done.
On.
As you remember in the Zidell situation on their application or their agreement, they based a cap on, like, numbers on the environmental concerns. So a lot of these people will base a cap, so it kind of regulates the price, but it gives you that range, and it's very important. These appraisers are very knowledgeable on that. The brokers are very knowledgeable on that. But I want that range set to where when these investors come in, we get top value, and it goes back into services within the city. That's my main concern, top value when it's surplus, not before or excess.
And we, this council agrees with your,
okay, thank you
your
for
values
your
proposition. We just want to figure out how we get there.
Yeah, that's very helpful. Thank I you. Think having PDC look at those questions is a good idea. I appreciate you raising these issues, Lightning, because obviously you're trying to get us to get the maximum value for the taxpayer.
And upon surplus. Agree. Thank
yeah,
you.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome. You're already on. You're good.
I am. Okay. Thanks. My name is Michael Wade. I'm with the Friends of Portland Community Gardens. And our interest in this issue came up because of the Johns situation. And we're actually kind of, you know, we are in agreement with all of the new policy that's been developed and the amendments as I've seen them come forward this morning. Our main concern is the way that cash flows are impacted in the budgets of the bureaus. When you sell a piece of property to another bureau, then the cash flow is an expense for one and income for the other. And we need to neutralize that effect so that there is no penalty for transferring something that we already own to somewhere else we already own on the individual bureaus. And so that's our primary concern. It's also very difficult to justify a capital efficiency argument when it comes to something like a community garden. I can put a house on any community garden in the city and make money for the city. You know, that's just the way it is. But it's a value that we're delivering where we're giving individuals dignity of growing their own food. We're building community and we're bringing a whole lot of values to the city process. And so the Johns issue is one, but we're going to have more of those come up in the future. And that's all we wanted to say. Let's just make our point.
Thank you.
So thank you. The Water Bureau and the Bureau of Environmental Services will not surplus one property that has a community garden on it until until we have had a comprehensive community conversation. And one of the things that we'll explore when we have that conversation is the covenants in bonds and the language of the charter, which limit what those bureaus can do with surplus property as compared to other bureaus. And we'll have a conversation about that. It doesn't mean that those are roadblocks, yeah, because I think there are some creative solutions that we can work to. But they are different than other general fund bureaus because the charter and bond covenants say they're different. And if you doubt me, we've been sued over this. So, I have to, one side of my brain, I don't know if it's my left or my right side, loves community gardens. And I doubled the city's capacity during
both
my tenure.
Both sides of your brain have to love community gardens.
There you go. The mayor's shaming me. Both sides of my brain love community gardens. But I also have a fiduciary duty under the charter not to commingle utility assets and ratepayer dollars with general fund bureaus. And it's not something that I establish as a rule. It's something you establish in adopting the charter. So, do I think we can find the middle ground so that the utilities satisfy their legal obligations and communities that cherish community gardens continue to have them? I'm guessing we can, but there won't be any surplusing of community gardens till we have that discussion. And I think reasonable people will get to the right outcome on this.
Well, I think also that one of the things that we recognize is that as we increase density in the city, we are taking away available properties for community gardens and for that activity. And I think that's a real problem as we, you know, this density issue. If you want to look at our community gardens, the way they're organized in the city, where we have the most pressure on available plots, it's in the inner city. And as we go further out, it becomes less and less of an issue. But Johns itself, both north and south, are fully subscribed and actually have waiting lists of a couple of years. And so I think, you know, that's where we're coming from, is we want to preserve as much of the available land in the city as we can.
So community garden space in East Portland is actually a huge issue, and that's partly why I proposed the amendment to say that just because a bureau doesn't have the money doesn't necessarily mean that they don't get to express interest in the property. So to be really clear with my legislative intent, and I believe the rest of the councils in adopting that amendment, the goal is, I think the point was well made by Friends of Community Gardens and others at their last hearing, that if general fund money paid for a property, it doesn't necessarily mean that general fund money should be transferred between one bureau or another, in the budget process, the council could just direct transportation to give a property to parks, for example, if there aren't any covenants on it. So that's the intent, is to make sure that, as Commissioner Fisher says, we don't mix up rate bureau dollars versus general fund dollars, but also if there's, we used to have a requirement in parks that part of our budget was selling $400,000 worth of parkland every year in order to provide the programming. This council did away with that. We had to borrow money at the end of the last fiscal year because we didn't have the $400,000, and so the council gave us an advance on this year's budget. But that's an example. I don't believe any other general fund bureau has a requirement to make a prop, to sell off properties in order to be able to balance their budget. So now none of them do. And so we can, as a council, and I hope this policy directs it, that's what I'm intending to do, is to say, council, figure out, council this one and future councils, did general fund dollars pay for it in the first place, in which case any bureau should be able to have it without without finding the money within its budget, in my opinion.
Having paid once, right.
Yeah. Amen. Amen to that statement.
Okay.
And I appreciate she drew a clear distinction between general fund bureaus and ratepayer dollars and ratepayer bureaus because the charter draws the distinction, not anyone up here.
Yeah, and I accept that totally. I just, you know, I sure hope that we work hard to minimize the conflict.
Thank you both.
With
thank you
help,
very much.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Okay, let's take other testimony and then we'll get back to amendments.
The last three who signed up are John Gibbon, Marianne Schwab, and Tom Karwacki.
Come on up. Good afternoon.
That's where it's got to.
Go ahead, John.
This is my second to last official testimony before this body.
Oh, yeah? I'm not counting.
Thanks. One more. Okay, I'm John Gibbon. I live in Quail Park in southwest Portland, Markham neighborhood. I'm Sweeney Land Use Chair. I'm almost done with a sentence on PURB, and I hope you're getting a lot of people applying. I may in the future apply, but not this year. The issues I want to raise are something that I support the amendments, but I just have a couple of comments. The situation that we got into with Freeman Tank was a situation where property had been surplused before I sat on PURB, and it, with the downturn in the economy, it just disappeared. I mean, it disappeared into the fog. And I think that what I've seen from staff is a real good job. I'm a little concerned, and I have to. We didn't get feedback at citywide land use till the end of last month, or we didn't get a report on this till then. So I haven't had a chance to even get to my land use committee and talk about it with knowledge. So a little more time on this would be useful. I think Amanda's request for the 60-day thing is good because that's the reality of neighborhood associations. But my two points are, one, if we're going to help these neighborhoods do something, I would suggest that once we get a policy started, we do some sort of case study. And I can give you an example of a transfer between bureaus, the property at 17th and Taylor's Ferry, where a water bureau pumping station was transferred over to BES and turned into a storm drainage area. And I think it's been real successful. We planted a bunch of trees there. Those kind of case studies ought to be available for the communities to look at and try to understand how they can do something with the property. Because I know it was the other Amanda Black from Markham neighborhood that got that going. The other thing I would say is, let's hope we don't have another economic downturn and things disappear, but I would urge you to, once you get this program up, to do like annual reports to maybe the coalitions, like so that we publish a paper in Southwest that goes out once a year to everybody, and there should be something in there, a map and listing of surplus properties every year. So if these long-term things develop, that the neighborhoods get some warning on a basis. Hopefully a lot of these properties will sell for all the reasons that Commissioner Fish talked about. We've got to get this policy going, but The other side of it is we can't have a repeat of Freeman, and we're good in the short term, but not in the long term.
Thanks, John. Marianne, good morning. Good afternoon.
Hello, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Marianne Schwab. I'm here today to represent the Southeast Uplift. The Southeast Uplift Board of Directors is requesting that the Council defer action on this proposed property disposal policy for 60 days in order to allow adequate time for public review and input. While we commend the Council for its efforts to create a central inventory of property and a consistent and clear policy for property disposal, there has been inadequate public outreach for a matter which can significantly impact the city's neighborhoods. The need for a centralized inventory is such that we welcome the Council, while deferring action on property disposal policy, direct the bureaus to begin work of identifying the properties under their control immediately. And this was signed on the behalf of the Southeast Uplift Board of Directors, Don Gardner, Vice President.
A question. Why would, does Southeast Uplift think that what's in the proposal is worse than the current policy?
It's the time sequence, as you've mentioned. And you've just mentioned it as well. He was at the Citywide Land Use Group, and that was the first he'd seen it. And also, with Southeast Uplift, we haven't had any time. The things are coming at us so fast and furious, we need that extra time just to review it, to comment on it. That was not within the schedule.
Okay, now, let me repeat her point, though. That is, we could change this policy again sometime.
Right.
But we have a policy now. This will make it, in my opinion as well, better. Doesn't mean that we never open that book again. So I'm a little surprised at that recommendation from Southeast Uplift, too, because, the perfect is the enemy of the good, but good is better than bad. And I think we're improving the policy by taking action on this policy today, and doesn't mean we can never talk about it again.
Well, I respectfully disagree from my personal point, and that is that the neighborhood associations, including my Sunnyside Neighborhood Association, we're not able to look at this, review it, and address it. Thank you.
Okay. You're certainly welcome to come back. Should we pass it today? Mm-hmm. As the mayor said, that this isn't a policy. It can be changed again. Mm-hmm. I feel a great sense of urgency that the current policy hasn't been working. So I think we should improve it, and then we can improve it again if necessary. So certainly I'd be happy to hear from Sunnyside and Southeast Uplift after however long it takes for you to review it, whether you are satisfied or whether you have additional changes you'd like to suggest.
So I'm hearing you say we can have the 60 days so that all neighborhoods can address it?
I'm not willing to continue the current unacceptable or troublesome policy that we've seen several times has not worked very well for neighborhoods. So I would prefer to do something today and then have you take all the time that you need to propose additional changes. Mm-hmm. But making it a little bit better, in my opinion, would be better than not making it a little bit better.
It's not like the comp plan.
Good point. And I'd like to put my Marianne Schwab hat on now, okay? I feel that we have a good example here. Now, Mr. Lightning stated it, and he stated it, with transfer of deeds. Sunnyside Neighborhood Association and the Sunnyside School went to the Parks Bureau, and the Parks Bureau rented our 2.4-acre playground $1 a year for 25 years. In comes a new principal with the Sunnyside Environmental School, and out goes the hearing school, and that worked. So we didn't get it renewed. So then no money transferred. So what I'm saying is, like with community gardens, or I'm looking at an R2-D2 piece of property right now that's owned by PDC, the same thing. You've got the title. We don't need to switch anything around. Just give a long-term lease, and you'll always own the property. It works in Hawaii. It works in Austria. It worked here in Portland with the Sunnyside Kaiser Hospital that had a clinic on about 78th and Division. Mm-hmm. The German Aid Society, in their agreement, said that if ever that was broken, that hospital had to make it shovel-ready. So when you go out there, that building's gone. We could do the same thing.
Marianne,
keep it.
Marianne, just to be clear, nothing in this ordinance works against what you just said.
I'm happy to hear that.
There is nothing in this ordinance which in any way limits the ability of two bureaus to talk about a long-term lease. we can't mandate that anyone does that, because we can't tell Commissioner Fritz she must take a long-term lease on a piece of property and maintain it. But if Commissioner Fritz and the Parks Bureau says we're interested in a piece of property, nothing before us limits the council and the city from having a discussion about a potential lease and lease terms. It is utterly silent on that question. And I think your concern would be if it had some language which says we couldn't do that. And I want to assure you, it doesn't in any way address that question. Therefore, it stays within our discretion.
One thing I'd say is the neighborhoods really see this, and it's understandable. They see this on a land use level as an impact. I mean, when property changes use, they see it as an impact. And that's got people concerned. So the offer of, don't be surprised if I come back wearing my Sweeney hat in a few months after our land use committee looks at it and has some more recommendations.
Yeah, that's fair. Right. We welcome that.
Hope you do.
Okay.
Tom, thank you.
Good afternoon.
Sure. Good afternoon. My name is Tom Karwacki, and I'm speaking on behalf of the North Portland Neighborhood Chairs Network, which is all of the Neighborhood Association chairs, and the North Portland Parks Committee. And both of these have supported the following adjustments to this property policy that's under consideration. Number one, provide standing for neighborhood associations. This would be both in the accessing process and in the surplusing process. And the issue is just providing them standing. Providing at least 60 days notice in both the processing and accessing and surplusing of properties. Provide all notices and signage in multiple languages. And one of the concerns is on this website and so forth is that it has to be in some other languages so that people can, and especially signs. You've made a policy of being inclusive. Let's try to live up to it.
So Tom, how many languages would you propose we use for purposes of the sign that goes on the property that lists a phone number for someone to call?
I think you all have looked at that issue. I believe the number that you've said is 6, but I'm open to everything. So obviously Spanish is one, but in many areas we have a large population of Vietnamese, Chinese, Somalis. I'm going to let you all deal with it. Just that it's in multiple languages. That's all I'm trying to be inclusive. And then consult with the city auditor to establish a property valuation methodology and disposal process so that the city auditor should also be weighed in and be allowed to give some comments. The network notes that the selling of some properties, like Water Bureau properties, already owned by the public to another city bureau may be redundant. I hear you, Commissioner Fish, on some of the concerns. Since many city properties have been in the city ownership for more than decades, in some cases a century, and the fire station, the Canton Fire Station, just got on the list of that inventory, some for more than a century, we urge the City Council to take the time to listen and to consider public comment on this process. And, you know, this is generally, and my comments initially to the ONI and so forth on this was that this process was rushed. I think what you're here, all of us, not that you, I think you're right, a little better is better than bad, but this process is very rushed and was rushed really fast compared to other processes. And so you did create a lot of unrest within the communities. And I think in the long run, it'd be nice to have the bureaus work with the neighborhoods and other stakeholders on some of these large projects, such as Cary Boulevard, which obviously we're interested in.
So there's a great irony in this conversation, but let me just take a stab at it. We spent a year with Southwest Portland drafting the model that is the basis for this legislation. We had the Neighborhood Association leadership come to council and say, we've got it right. We test drove it. We erred on the side of doing more notice, not less. And precisely what we were hoping would happen, we got some pushback because there was more sunshine and people fixed on things like some community gardens. And you know what? It worked.
Mm-hmm.
It worked. We went through a year's process to get the model upon which this is based. And the first time there was a challenge, an issue that the community wanted to be heard on, under this system that creates more sunshine and more notice, there were people saying, don't do that to my property. And so we said, we hear you and we won't. So I just want to put in context that it's actually working.
Right.
And so when I hear that we haven't had a chance to discuss this.
No, it was this particular proposal, not the larger process that you were talking about, but this particular process.
I'm not taking anything away from what Betsy Ames has done.
Mm-hmm.
But this policy comes out of the community and is modeled very closely on what the community has said to us is the model they want. And the only commotion we've had is that it's working. And people have a right to have a commotion before, not after, the deed is sold, the sign. Freeman was an example where we had a commotion and people found out after the fact. This is designed to give an early warning, and I welcome the feedback we've gotten because very concerned citizens have said, don't do anything to that property. And the city said, we won't. So, I think we can improve it, and we should, and we're going to get regular feedback. But just be clear, this is a community policy that we're being asked to adopt today with amendments from the community. And in my judgment, it's already working because the Water Bureau and the Bureau of Environmental Services got early feedback from neighbors that they didn't like having certain properties surplus, so we backed off. So I don't want that lost in the discussion. And I salute Southwest Portland neighbors who spent an awful lot of time helping us draft the model upon which this is based. I salute them because I don't want to diminish the work they did.
Mr. Carwick, I was wondering about your first point when you said that neighborhoods should have standing.
Right.
What do you mean by that?
Well, essentially that they come forward, that they actually are like the departments, not just a phone call at the end, but they actually have to affirmatively state interest or not. And that's sort of one of the concerns, in that they actually have standing just like another bureau in some respects. These are the people who've lived in the residents who've lived in the neighborhoods, and the community's been participating in what actually happens with this property. That's what it really is calling for some sort of process where the neighborhoods can actually participate in whatever happens.
I'd be interested as you and the North Portland chairs look over the policy more, what else you think we should do, because that was our intent, is to give standing. As I mentioned to a previous testifier, we can't require volunteers to give us an answer.
I understand.
Nor can we confer veto power.
Oh, I wasn't trying to say veto power.
So standing in a legal sense would mean that. So I think if I take Commissioner Fritz's point and say it again for a second time today, we've given neighborhoods standing in the process. As Commissioner Fish articulated, that's where this idea came from. They have standing to be involved. They don't have standing to say, no, you may not do this, City Bureau. And that would be crossing a line.
No, I understand that.
And Mayor, de facto, they're going to have a kind of standing because the moment a entity of the city determines something is excess, that's going on a website.
Right.
Right, but I'm suggesting that the neighborhoods get involved in the before the excessing, some notices in the excess. Here's properties that are being considered for excess. That's a consideration that is before. Coming at the notification when we're under the surplus side, there's already some opportunities where, for instance, a property may have some other use, and another department may not, we may be able to influence another department on that.
Let's take the mayor's suggestion. Let's test drive this and see whether that's a real concern or a theoretical concern, because at least with respect to the utilities, we listed all of our proposed excess properties, and we got slammed from some people who said, what are you going to do with all those properties? And we said, well, actually, what we're doing now is letting you know at the earliest possible stage that we're thinking of surplusing them. The system worked. I think the point you're making, we should test drive this for 6 months or a year, see whether there's been some breach in the role the important role that neighborhoods are going to play on this, and if necessary, revisit it. But I my guess is that you're going to have more notice than you know what to do with it.
All I'm asking is also that, as I said last time, the Water Bureau's website and so forth, that provides a transparency. What everyone would like is a transparent process as much as possible, and hopefully the finance office will actually use yours as the model of what should be on for every property.
Here, I'd like to have this gentleman get an extra 5 minutes for his testimony. Please, let's not cut him short. I think he's onto something. Thank you. Thanks. Thank you for complimenting Water Bureau staff. They did the work.
Editor.
That's a record show. Thank you.
I'm complimenting the two people in the back of the room here who's done all the work.
Yeah, They've done good work.
And
thank you.
Brian and Betsy.
Thank you so much.
They've been very open. Thank you.
Good. All right, anyone else want to speak on this item? So
if I could have
please.
Staff come back up.
Yeah, could have staff come back up.
I have two things to discuss as potential additional amendments. The first was Ms. McCarthy's paragraph about the non-major process and as to whether things could be posted. Could you read the language that she proposed or give us the...
She proposed adding details regarding the planned disposition of surplus property in categories 1 and 2 that are exempted from the public notification provisions in Section C will be posted on the website at least 90 days prior to their disposal. The disposal details shall include, at a minimum, the dollar value of any disposal transaction, the real property transfer recipient, the reason for the property's inclusion in Section C, I think that would be exclusion, and the other pertinent property details as described in Part B. Category 2 properties are those that are PHB and PDC properties. Those go through a notice of funding availability or a RFP process. They have very particular ways that they dispose of property. They never actually declare those surplus because they are going to be used for public purposes. So those would be wouldn't be posted on our website. For Category 1 properties, what the proposal requires is that they include all the same information in the ordinance that the rest of the properties must have before the council declares them a surplus, and that they must be posted at least 15 days prior to the council consideration of the ordinance.
Would there be, so it really is the Category 1 properties that I'm concerned about, making sure that we have adequate notice for that. Would there be a problem with requiring a longer period of notice than 15 days?
I think having those be posted earlier, that is a minimum time. You know, bureaus are having to prepare those documents for council well in advance of the council hearing. So,
Betsy, what's an example of a Category 1 property that's worth less than $50,000 that we're talking about?
And Tom Klutz is in the background, so can correct me if I'm wrong on this. But I believe there's a property that has gone through that excess determination process by the Bureau and the Commissioner, a 148th Avenue pump station. It's a small property that was acquired as part of an acquisition. It's surrounded by a retirement community, I believe. It hasn't been in use since the Water Bureau acquired it. The Bureau's determined its excess to their needs. It isn't a property that we can necessarily put out on the open market. It isn't valued at very much. That's the type of property that they would be bringing forward as a Category 1.
So Category 2 doesn't apply because that's
right. That PDC and PHB.
Yeah. Yes, I'm just talking about Category 1, and I'm wondering if there'd be support for requiring that to be posted to the website, say 60 days ahead of time. Coming to council.
One thing I'm starting to get hesitant about is creating rules to address problems that haven't come up through the process. And this is not something that we've heard broadly at any stage. And we're going to at some point have a single person who's dedicated to maintaining this website. So I will support any change that enhances transparency if it actually serves a public interest rather than having another hoop that we jump through. And I'm not yet persuaded that this is a problem that needs to be solved, but I perhaps would request we defer on that and take that up after we have a little experience. But there's a lot of laudable things we could do to add further information and transparency. The question is, at what point does the burden of doing that outweigh the utility to the public? And since I think our touchstone is transparency and notice, I'd want to know that this really does make a difference rather than just create another burden for the department in terms of capturing information.
That's a good direction, and perhaps we should have a six-month check-in to see another hearing on this. My second one, though, is in response to the North Portland Chairs regarding the posting at the property, which is on page 4 of the policy, section B. It does say that the Bureau shall place an informational sign on the real property in a reasonably visible location. I believe we should add at the end of that paragraph, the sign shall be in languages common to the area as advised by the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Because that gets away, I think there are 10 different languages which are preponderant, but you wouldn't necessarily need to post them in all 10.
So if we're in the middle of a community that has, for example, a large number of Vietnamese Americans or something, we would bring that. And Commissioner Fritz, since you are the new commissioner in charge of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, may I suggest that in addition to this discrete change, at some point we look at the question of notices citywide, anything that we post, because I'd like this to be consistent with what we do with any notice, and we do lots of notices. This is just one.
And we can certainly improve on how we notify, yes.
I would, Betsy, are you okay with that amendment?
If you can read it aloud, that'd be great.
The sign shall be in languages common to the area as advised by the Office of Neighborhood Involvement.
She's nodding, so I will second that. Mayor, can we put that on the table?
Yes, please.
Sorry. We have an amendment on the language of the notices. It's been moved and seconded. We're just voting to put it on the table.
Okay, roll call.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Good catch, thank you, aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, other questions, suggestions, amendments?
I move the package.
Okay, so the resolution as amended with all the amendments that we have adopted. Correct?
Saltzman.
Discussion, roll call.
Saltzman.
Well, I'd like to thank Betsy Ames and Brian Inge and others who helped to craft these policies and these amendments, and thanks to Commissioner Fish also for spearheading this effort as well. I'm pleased that we've clarified that there will be a subscription notification system for interested members of the public, and I also believe the amendment language today regarding the consideration of disposition of properties for affordable housing, open space, and community use will allow the council to have the information it needs when it makes these decisions when property is declared surplus. And I appreciate Commissioner Fritz and Fish's amendments, which I believe have tightened and ensure better community notification and multilingual now, too. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, Commissioner Fish, thank you for starting this off with your revisions to the Water Bureau and Environmental Services policy, and thanks to Betsy and Brian for taking up the charge. And then what a great process. What a wonderful amount of input, suggestions from the community that have improved this, suggestions from each one of us up here that have improved it. I think this is how public policy should be done, and I really appreciate it, and especially with the commitment that we're going to not say it's done and we're never going to look at it again, that we're definitely very aware that public land is public land, it's for public purposes, and we need to be very careful in not tying the hands of future councils, but directing a good process for how to make decisions, and that's what this does. So thank you very much. Aye.
Fish?
Mayor Hales, I used to carry a grudge that OMF stole Betsy Ames from my office when she was my chief of staff, and I think if there's any consolation, it's the idea that instead of just being the leader of my office, she's in a position to serve the whole city on things like this. And this is a really good piece of work, Betsy, and to you and Brian and the whole team, thank you. And to the Water Bureau team that worked on this, I want to thank them too. I think government's the only area of life where we're not allowed to make mistakes and learn from them. I read a biography recently of Steve Jobs, and he credits all the success of Apple with all the copious mistakes they made and the lessons they learned. But government, we're not allowed to make mistakes, and then we get punished for them. And I actually think that mistakes or errors, whether they're big or small, are the critical. The question isn't whether we're going to make mistakes. We're human. We're going to err. The question is, do we learn from them? And then do we have the humility to go to the community and get it right? Two things I've learned from this process. One is that we always do our best work when there's full sunshine. And that's what this is today. This is about putting more sunshine on the people's business. And every time we do it, we serve the public interest better, and we strengthen public trust, which is actually something we all care about. And the second, as Commissioner Fritz said, is most of our best work is done in partnership with the community. It is not you and us or us and them, it's we. And when we fully engage the community, we get good work like this. And I want to especially thank the folks at the Multnomah Neighborhood Association for a lot of time and energy over the last couple of years pitching constructive and creative ideas, which Betsy has borrowed and enhanced and fine-tuned and added to this larger omnibus package. And she's taken one bureau's set of ideas, improved them, and then applied them citywide, which is, I think, a model of what we should be doing in the city. So thank you. I'm very proud to vote aye.
Hales.
Great work. And again, measure twice, cut once, but don't measure indefinitely. So we should try this and make sure that it works. I think it will, because it has been collaborative and thoughtful. And there are limits to how much we, by policy and ordinance and resolution, can create clockwork that makes decisions. We still have to make decisions. Commissioners in charge still have to make decisions. They still have to exercise judgment. In fact, the charter has a provision in there that says the commissioner in charge is responsible for the property and the operations of the bureau unless otherwise directed by the council. And we cannot make the five of us into marionettes. We still have to exercise discretion and judgment. But I think this lays down a base of expectations and process that will make sure everybody knows what's going on and that judgment will be exercised with the input of the community and with the bureaus actually talking to each other. That's a base expectation that I think everyone ought to be able to rely on, that the bureaus talk to each other and that we hear from the community. I'm being a little flippant here, but I'm saying I think this is good to have this procedure in place, but you're still going to have five of us who are heads up saying, wait a minute, couldn't the Parks Bureau use that? And asking the neighborhood, hey, wouldn't it be a good idea if, or hearing from the neighborhood who makes a suggestion about that. So I think we're there. I think this is going to work. Let's find out. Tune it if it doesn't. And I appreciate everyone's good work from the community and from the city. Aye.
I just wanted to take one moment to say that it wasn't my policy. It was really the full Portland Property Management Committee involving all of your bureaus participating in this. So just wanted to highlight that. And we will be using the Water Bureau's website as the initial template for the citywide web page.
Great. Thank you both. Okay, one more item this afternoon, which is 7:51.
Authorize sewer revenue bonds to refund outstanding sewer revenue bonds.
Mr. Beery.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. Jonas Beery, the city's debt manager. This ordinance authorizes refunding of outstanding sewer revenue bonds to reduce annual debt service costs. There are currently around $425 million in potentially refundable bonds. If current interest rates hold, we're able to include all of the anticipated refundable bonds. We expect to reduce debt service costs by approximately $30 million. The bulk of the savings will be achieved in fiscal years 2021-22, and 22-23, which are the peak years of annual debt service for the sewer program. This refunding may also provide the city an opportunity to modify certain bond covenants to be more favorable to the city. In order to do that, we need to get appropriate consents to those changes from bondholders and insurers. We're working on that as part of the process. Examples of those changes include more flexible debt service requirements and language updates that better accommodate recent accounting changes. I want to flag that if we receive the consents as expected, we will need to return to council to formally implement those changes in the master bond declaration, so expect that to come forth later this fall after we close the bonds. We expect to sell the bonds via competitive sale and a bidding process in August 2015. It's awfully lonely in here for a request to save $30 million, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Good news rarely has a big audience.
So in the off chance that no one up here today is here in 2022 to celebrate the good news, I believe you told me in my briefing that this will have an impact on our five-year forecasts for the utilities, for example, because with the anticipated savings down the road, we'll be able to, ahead of the curve, start thinking about whether those savings should go into capital spending, rate reduction, or some combination. Is that true?
Correct. That's accurate. The first year of savings is the first year right now that's just outside the five-year forecast. So as the next iterations of forecast discussions go on, this will start to be part of that option discussion.
Even if none of us are here to pop the champagne cork in 2022, it will be a conversation we'll be having as we look at our five-year forecast and look at rates generally, because we'll be able to make some predictions or some planning about whether, again, those dollars go into capital, rate reduction, or something else that the council thinks is important.
That's correct, Commissioner.
So thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Anyone want to speak on this item? If not, it is an emergency ordinance. Roll call.
Saltzman?
Thank you, Jonas. This is indeed something worth celebrating, saving money. Aye.
Fritz?
Well, thank you for sitting through not only this long morning, but the previous one where you didn't even get to your item. That must set some kind of all-time record for a staff person patiently waiting to save $24 million for the citizens of Portland. So thank you very much for all of your work and for, yet again, saving us more money. Aye.
Thank you.
Fish.
Nicely done, and thanks for the briefings and your work on this. Aye.
Hales.
This city is well managed financially, and this is just one more indication of that, and it relies a lot on our professional staff. So, Jonas, thank you for the work you do, and again, the fact that this is unspectacular in terms of the noise level doesn't mean that it's not spectacular in terms of the outcome. Thank you very much. Aye.
Thank you.
We're recessed till 2 p.m.